everybody, I'm Angela Belt, and welcome back to the Mood Board Podcast. I'm really excited about this interview today. One, because I have been a fan of this brand for a long time. And so when their team reached out to me and said, hey, would you love to do an interview with our founder and talk about a new product, a new collection that we're working on? I was like, absolutely. So no more suspense. It's actually going to be the founder of Semi Handmade, John McDonald. And I'm really excited because we're talking about the next iteration of his business, which is called Boxy by Semi Handmade. What's so cool about this new thing is that Boxy actually has cabinetry that is already pre-constructed for you that you can honestly put in yourself if you feel comfortable with that, or you can find a local general contractor to do it for you. So this is kitchen, bathroom design, cabinets already done, made in the US that can be delivered in under 10 weeks. For me, this is like the next level of where I really am excited to see this business go. I've been using Semi Handmade for a long time. I've always had clients when we want to get into design and we want to get into custom cabinets and kitchens and the price points. They always seem like a great middle ground for me, and they always have beautiful results. So I felt like a no-brainer when I kind of learned about this next iteration of the business with Boxy. So that's one part of the interview John and I will certainly be digging into. But the second part is really just his journey of how he got into the cabinetry business altogether, carpentry, all that stuff. And I will tell you, it is a roller coaster of a ride. You guys know that I love doing conversations like this where people say, God, I thought this was my whole plan. This is what I was going to do. And you end up doing something totally different. And you're way more successful than you thought you'd ever be, probably in the first place. But it's all the things that you went through and the ups and downs that get you where you are today. And I think John's interview is really good for that. So I'm excited for you guys to listen, dig in. It's definitely a fun one to begin your week off with. Hello, John. I'm really excited to have you on the Mood Board Podcast. I don't know if you know this about me, but I have been a big fan of Semi Handmade for a long time. Whenever clients come to me and we want to talk about kitchen design, Semi Handmade always comes up as an option that I recommend. So when I got the call, can John come on the show and talk about it? I'm like, absolutely, 100%.
Well, that's very kind of you, Angela. I appreciate that. I'm excited to be here. And it's so humbling to hear that, because, you know, it's been 10, 11 years now. And I do hear that from time to time. And it always sort of catches me, you know.
And, you're like, why?
So thank you. Yeah, well, I mean, it's so much bigger than me than when we started. And it takes something like that to sort of, you know, get reminded of it.
Yeah. So let's start with just the first question. You know, we have first time listeners. Maybe they don't know the brand, or, you know, we all want to hear the origin story. How did you start Semi Handmade?
So semi-handmade.
Okay.
It started, either one doesn't matter. It started probably officially in 2011. Okay. And so Semi-Handmade makes doors that fit IKEA cabinets.
Okay.
So IKEA, God bless them, they, when buying a kitchen or some of their bathrooms or their closet systems or media cabinets, they give you the flexibility of not ordering doors.
Yeah.
And so what that means is you can buy the cabinet boxes, which are great. You can buy the interior hardware, which is exceptional. And then they sort of leave it up to you. If you want to make it yourself, great. If you want to buy it from a company like us, that's great too. And so that's kind of how we started. Now, the backstory on me is, do you want me to go into that?
Yeah, I do want you. Yeah, okay, good. Go all in.
I mean, I've told the story quite a bit. You know, I always say, like, I have a good story, and then you hear 10 other people's stories and everybody's, you know, story is better. My story is that you and I kind of mentioned off the show, I'm 54 now. So when I was 21, I somehow had like stars in my eyes, grew up outside Philadelphia, and I was going to be in the film business. And okay. I had no reason to sort of think that, and no background and no experience.
This felt right.
Yeah, I was just like, this is what I'm going to do. And I was going to I always say I was going to be rich and famous, didn't matter which was first, right? Okay. I didn't know how I was going to do it. Maybe I'll be an actor, whatever. I preface that, you know, by saying I was not like in school productions or anything like that. I just figured I'll figure it out, because people sometimes do.
It's true. There are those stories.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like professional sports, or it's not like writing or whatever, where you got to have some chops to do it, but people sort of, you know, get into it. And so I was very fortunate. We hooked up with a family friend that I'd only met once, like 5 years prior, when I was 16. And she was head waitress at the most famous deli in Beverly Hills. There's this spectacular deli still around called Nate and Al's in the heart of Beverly Hills. Mm-hmm. And that is where the most powerful Hollywood people go to eat lunch and breakfast every day. And so Kay was the head waitress for 40 years. This woman, Kay Coleman, spectacular woman. And she took me in, didn't know me, and said, "Hey, my dad grew up with her in Bryn Mawr. And she'd been out in LA for 50 years, and she said, have John come stay with me." And so I stayed with her. It was incredible. And she knew everyone. And I always tell, like, her name is Kay Coleman. People Google her. Unfortunately, passed away a while ago, but she was the kind of unofficial mayor of Beverly Hills. Yeah. And on Oscar Day, in the 90s and in the early 2000s, Harry Winston would actually give her like a $500,000 worth of jewels to wear while she was waiting tables. And there would be the security guys following her. And it was just like, it was incredible. It's hard to describe just how, when I moved out there in 90, I guess in 89, that was the heyday of like Spago and Wolfgang Puck and all these outrageous restaurants. And because she was like the head waitress, she knew everybody. And so she took me, just me and her, her husband Lou was a little bit older. And we would go to dinner, and Kay was probably 60 and I was 21. And I didn't know anything. and it was just kind of crazy. And so she got me a job at Paramount Studios. I rode a bike and delivered mail to people like Tom Cruise and Eddie Murphy back in the heyday of those two guys. I mean, they're still great, but that was like, I mean, Eddie Murphy was Eddie Murphy. Like,
yeah, yeah.
990, and Tom Cruise, same thing. And so I kind of networked, and I somehow was making $6 an hour, and I got a job on a movie. And I worked on that and the TV show. And then I sort of fell into writing, and I was sort of like everybody else. You're either going to be an actor. I knew right away, like within about 5 minutes, I couldn't cut it as a writer, as an actor.
I was saying, like, I thought we were a writer.
Right. Yeah. Because it's the kind of thing, whether it's Spencer Tracy quote or somebody where he said, you can't want to be an actor. You've got to have to be an actor. Like a lot of things, it's got to be like all encompassing. Mm-hmm. Right. And I had no heart for it. But writing was something that you could learn. And so when I was in the mailroom, we used to dumpster dive behind the story department at Paramount Studios. And we would find scripts and there was scripts that were getting produced and scripts that were famous movies and things like that. And so we kind of all taught ourselves. And so that's what I did. So I started freelance writing through my early 20s, mid 20s. And once I stopped working on production, like for directors and TV shows, I was just waiting tables like everybody else in Hollywood. Yeah. And so that's what I did all through my 20s. I wrote a lot. I never made any money. I always try to be clear about that. But I lived a lot like writers write, like a lot of things. There are a lot of people that love the idea of it and love sitting with their laptops in a coffee house and not getting anything done. But I was like, really, I was always disciplined about getting up early, exercising and writing, and then waiting tables at night. And that's just what you do. And you can make some decent money waiting tables. And it's also a good, you know, way to sort of learn about life in general. And
so how does this all come together?
I know it's long, Angela. I'm gonna try and make this fast. So through my late 20s, again, nothing's happening. I'm becoming just like bitter. I mean, like, just because it's like a lot of things. It's this sense of, on the one hand, my parents are unbelievably supportive emotionally, financially. You know, that's impossible to deny. I was able to live my dream, but it, you know, max out my credit cards like a lot of people. But my parents were always there as sort of a safety net. I tried out a lot of things, like through my late 20s, early 30s. I post 9/11, I said, I got to do something in my life, and I'll try to make a difference. And this is the best thing that didn't happen to me. I tried to get into the LAPD. Oh, and wow. I just, cause like I can have an effect on people's lives day to day. I realized, and I didn't get in, and that's a longer story. And thank God it was like embarrassing just not getting in, considering some of the people that did and have. But it probably saved my life because I'm too emotional and I wouldn't have been able to deal with the stuff you deal with, you know, those folks deal with every day.
I've got
a friend who's a social worker. I can't understand how people can do that and not be so changed. Anyway, so early 30s, tried a bunch of things, didn't get into LAPD, thank God. I started to like refinish furniture. I don't know why. My mom did that when I was younger. And so I used to buy stuff at like swap meets and antique stores and sort of sand it and reupholster it and try and sell it at swap meets. And then I had a friend that said, why don't you make furniture? And I thought, man, that never occurred to me. Like I have no background. I was not the kid like that was tinkering. I didn't even want to cut the grass. Like, you know,
let alone build it.
No interest, like, you know. And so, but I started taking, I figured, okay, I'll do it. And so I started making some really lousy furniture in my friend's garage that I was living out of his house. And I threw myself into it and started making crappy tables, lumber from Home Depot. I finally found a woodworking school in Southern California called Cerritos College, spectacular. And like 2 weeks before I was supposed to start the first class, which is shop safety, I had just gotten a brand new bandsaw. I unpacked it, threw out the instructions, never going to read instructions. I opened it up and within about 10 minutes, I cut off like two of my fingers.
What, John?
So, yeah, I mean, like that, and that's, you know, that's just me. Like it's, that was the kind of thing where I understood exactly why I did it. It was unbelievably stupid. I would go in to meet lots of guys and girls who were spectacular woodworkers that have had similar accidents. And that's a fluke. What I did was not a fluke. And I think that's what sort of helped me to sort of, okay, I'm just going to do it. So 2 weeks later, my hands all bandaged up. Physical therapy was down the road, but I started my shop class. And it was kind of funny. I'm in a shop class after I just cut off a couple fingers. But I stuck to it and I got pretty good and I took a couple classes. I started doing custom furniture with a friend that I had met there. We rented out a shop space, like 2000 square feet. And I was still waiting tables at night all through my mid to late 30s. And I got to be pretty good. And so I had in Southern California, I worked with good architects, good designers. I smartly kind of transitioned out of custom furniture more to cabinetry, kitchen cabinetry, just bigger jobs. You can make more money. It's more steady. And so that's what started happening. And so I was married at the time. I have a son who's 10 now, but I was married at the time to a woman and we didn't have any kids. And the furniture was just starting to happen. And then there were, you know, all at the same time, we split up in like 2008 and the recession hit. Right. And so everything dried up. And so in 2008, when I was, I guess, 40 years old, I did not have a child. I moved into my shop. I lived in my office, in my woodworking shop, probably like a 10 by 15, whatever the shop space, slept on my IKEA sofa for a year with my dog, Molly. And I dedicated, you know, myself to like, okay, I'm going to figure this out. Right. And so what I'd always done in the years prior and I did after was lots of design shows. Like back in the day when like Dwell magazine was still a spectacular magazine, but it was iconic.
Yeah, no.
They had Dwell and Design in San Francisco and they had Dwell and Design in LA. And so I would do that show. And so there were multiple shows where you would go and spend, you ran out of 10 by 10 or 10 by 20, you spend $4,000 for like 3 days and you'd set up your wares and you were, you know, it let you give the impression that you were as big as all the legacy brands. Like here's Caesarstone, here's Wolf Appliances, here's flooring companies, here's whomever, here's Delta Faucets, and then here's me. Yeah. And at the time I was originally called Handmade. And then when I shifted to more of the IKEA, it became semi-handmade. And that's when the IKEA sort of thing. And one of those shows, some random guy came up to me and he said around 2008, like, have you ever thought about making doors for IKEA cabinets?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, no, I don't even know what that means. Like, you know, I was like, I know, we all know what IKEA is. And that's where you buy your dorm furniture and stuff. He's like, no, you should think about it. And so we talked about it that day on a Friday. He came back the next day. We talked some more. And I kind of left and I was like, okay, I'm not going to, you know, whatever. And I didn't do anything for about 6 months. And then while I was living, you know, for a year in my shop, I was like, why don't I try this? And so with a couple, spectacular, you know, there's an architect named Barbara Bester in Southern California. And Barbara is, besides being like one of the coolest people ever, she is the go-to. Like, she designed the Beats headquarters. Like, when the Beastie Boys want their house done in Malibu, like, she did Silver Lake Conservatory with Flea for the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Like, she is the go-to kind of cool.
Yeah, like, okay, because I'm like, there's clientele.
Yeah, but she's so, like, flaky and weird in the best way, like, so kind of just, you know, she's just great. And so I had done a couple projects with her, and she said, well, why don't we try and incorporate some IKEA into this? And I was like, yeah, let's do that. So I'll do the kitchen cabinets, and all the base cabinets will look the same. I mean, they'll all be, you know, custom dimensions, and they'll all be plywood and stuff, and we'll have my doors. And then we can use IKEA for the wall cabinets and different basic sizes, because you're never going to know until you open them up. You know?
Right.
But the customer will save a ton of money. And so she was, you know, I mean, I credit her with maybe the first person to really take a chance. And so that's where the idea was like, well, we can do this. And so that's what I started to do. And so I think I had a couple of guys that worked on and off with me. And then around the same time, my ex-partner Ivan had come on board, and we went from like 100% custom to like, you know, 90% custom, 10% IKEA, slowly, like through the early, you know, 2009s and 10s and 11s, sort of incorporating that stuff. We were the second company to do that. And originally it's all Southern California, saying to people, hey, you can, you know, Angela, you can get a great system through IKEA. They're going to give you the flexibility of not buying the doors, and we can make you what you want.
Yeah.
I can give you custom veneers. We still do in a limited way, like one of a kind walnut that is real wood veneer. That is, your kitchen is different than her kitchen and his kitchen. And, you know, one of a kind with an IKEA base. And so that's where it just started to sort of take off. And so I'll take a breath so you can ask a question. But yeah, I mean, but through the, like 11, 12 and 13, and then, you know, the big jump was working with Sarah Sherman Samuel.
On that note, let's take a break.
I will say, so the way I discovered your products was when I started working with, I mean, they're not a company anymore, but it's Home Polish. So I don't know if you remember them, but it was definitely, you're a freelancer. You basically start your own business, and they bring you clients. And I remember, you know, you'd have people and they'd want these amazing kitchens, and we're always surprised by the sticker shock, you know, whenever they're like, I want the custom cabinets, and I'm going, well, we're in the New York area, you know, we're up $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 when you want to do this.
Right.
You know, and I'd say, but if we look at Semihand, we can definitely do this for much less.
Yeah.
And give you the same look. We can pull the same colors, the same hardware, you know, and that 90% of the time would always sell people, you know, and then they could go to the showroom and we kind of get a feel of it.
Yeah.
And that to me was like a big light bulb moment, because I think when people first heard IKEA, they were like, you know, Angela, I don't want the dorm room look, you know, or they'd be offended saying, well, I do have money, but I don't have the 50,000.
Right.
You know, and so that was always a nice equilibrium. I felt like what they wanted, and not kind of like break the bank. Like, you could renovate so much more for 50,000 versus just your kitchen. And so I think that's why your business always made a lot of sense. Especially just to me, and kind of getting people into it when they're doing a space. So let's jump to the next question, because John, I do love these types of interviews because I do think it's important also for listeners to understand that people always think that, like, when someone's doing something like what you've done, like, there's just been this linear path, the whole time. And I'm like, when you're a creative person, it's a freaking roller coaster, and you wear a lot of different hats until you really figure out where you want to land. So I did want to talk about, you know, with the pandemic, I feel like kitchens, bathrooms, those renovations, everybody's trying to do that right now. And there's so many things with inventory delays, getting the products, you know, I'm sure your business has been exploding. How have you really been trying to handle that model to kind of meet those needs for what people want right now?
Yeah, I think, we were fortunate during the pandemic. I mean, it's hard to believe that it's 2 years now, going into a third year. But yeah, I mean, I always feel I try to be humble about a lot of things. Some sense of like, I feel conflicted about the fact that we got deemed an essential business, and some places did, and especially, you know, considering I was in the restaurant, the food and beverage business, till, you know, for 20 years, I have deep empathy for those folks that just were, you know, devastated. And so, but we were fortunate. We, you know, we had, I think, around 60 employees at the time when it first hit. And we decided to cut back one day a week. You know, we were fortunate to keep everybody. For about 7 weeks, we cut back to 32 hours. Mm. And then we were able to start up again about, you know, in May. But yeah, we definitely got a bump. I mean, there's no doubt people are stuck at home. They can't, you know, disposable income, you know, you're not spending on travel. That's for sure. And vacation time. And so you're looking around and saying, you know, the whole model shifted with work from home, right? And so all that's happening. So how do I fix up my space? And so, you know, from everything I hear, the home remodeling sort of bump should continue for the next couple of years. People are buying houses, like real estate just getting weird. People are buying houses sight unseen, and there's bidding wars and crazy stuff like that, right?
Yeah. We just bought our first house in the past year, and fortunately we were able to buy from one of our friends, but I had a family member was, you know, sight unseen. They got it, you know, had to get it.
Yeah, well, congratulations. Yeah, I mean, I'm always going to be waiting for the other shoe to drop. Mm. You know, like, I don't know, like, even like, you know, you, like the thing you mentioned, it's nice hearing people's stories. And I always try to put myself as an example of like, hey man, there are second acts in life and third acts in life. Like, I was 41 living on a sofa. And I thought I didn't have a son at the time, which completely changed my life. And so I thought I was going to be like the fun uncle, and I didn't want to be that, right? On top of the professional thing, I wanted to be a dad. And so, I'm always tempering it. Like my fiance, who, you know, like a lot of people, is much smarter than me, who worked in mortgages forever. She's like, you know, what happens if the economy changes or interest rates go crazy or people stop buying houses? I'm like, babe, don't ask those questions. Like, I don't, like, I, it's not that I don't want to know.
She's right though. You need her.
But it's like, I'm always like, what do you, like, I don't know what you do. Like, you know, how you try and make your company bulletproof. Anyway, so I don't know if that answers the question. I'm always going to keep, you're going to have to keep reining me in, because I'm going to keep going, but.
No. I think you did answer the question. So I do want to jump to the biggest, I think one of the new companies, feels like the sister company that you've now added, called Boxy.
Right. Boxy. Yeah.
So let's talk about Boxy. What made you want to start this?
So Boxy is basically us owning the entire system, right? I mean, mm-hmm. You know, I will always say that with IKEA, look, we don't exist without IKEA, clearly, right? IKEA is a spectacular, whether people, you know, love everything about them or not, it's a spectacular brand. What they built is incredible. It's iconic. And they've also incredibly smartly built this whole, you know, let this whole ecosystem sort of spring up, which is us. They're the, you know, they're the platform. And so there are companies like us and that make doors. There are companies like BEMS that make slip covers. There are Pretty Pigs that make, you know, fancy legs where you can sort of dress things up. So we don't exist without them. It doesn't mean over the years we haven't sort of, I've said in another sort of interview, like a love-hate relationship. I love them, they hate us. You know, they, at times they resent, I think, the fact that other companies have sprung up, even though they let you not buy doors, and that's the key. At times, I think it's kind of bothered them. The other side of it is we have brought, you know, designers and celebrities and whomever to the IKEA sort of, you know, world that wouldn't normally come.
I would say they're also still getting business. People aren't still buying the frame.
Right. That's certainly good for them. But I've also felt like as we continue to grow, it just makes us more and more vulnerable. I mean, at this point, you know, with Boxy, we do have about 83 employees. And so we've been fortunate to grow every year. We've been profitable every year. But it does make you more and more vulnerable if you're sort of, you know, beholden to IKEA. Like, on the one hand, I don't think, knock on wood, they're ever going to stop letting people not buy doors, because that's just their model. And they'll always have, frankly, kitchen cabinet doors that are $3 each, you know? And so But Boxy was me thinking, you know, we can do this on our own. We can have our own system that's highly branded, that is certainly got to be quality, that can be delivered, fully assembled, you know, built in the US. And so it checks all those boxes. And so that's the opportunity. It took about two years to try and figure out a bunch of different incarnations. And then we finally launched it last March. And so we're going on our first year.
And when I was looking at the website, I want to be clear. So Boxy, I feel like you have 8 options. Yeah. You could theoretically do all of it yourself.
So just to be clear, yeah. So Boxy is so there are 8 different door options, right?
Okay.
And so semi-handmade is different because you're going to need to go to IKEA, buy the cabinets, buy the interior hardware, put everything together, and then you're going to hopefully come to semi-handmade. And then semi-handmade is going to ship you the doors. We're going to ship you the side panels and the trim, and everything is going to come together on site. Boxy is a fully assembled cabinet, right? Everything is fully built. Drawers are already installed. The fronts are already on. Okay. So for starters, you're not going, look, God bless all our semi-handmade customers. And, you know, I don't exist without them, but it's a pain in the neck sometimes having to deal with IKEA and somebody else. And then, mm-hmm. and they got to come at different times. Right. Mm-hmm. So Boxy is solving that problem. So everything's assembled, everything's built, everything comes to your front door. There are 8 door choices where semi-handmade has 45.
Yeah.
Because it's not an inventory product. Lead times are still like around 4 to 7 weeks, but it's made to order. But I can.
Yeah, but that's still great. 4 to 7.
No, it is. Right. And it is. But the problem with Boxy is that's an inventory product. And so I can't have 45 different door choices.
Yeah.
The amount of the volume and the cost would be just crippling
mm-hmm.
in the space. So that's what we, you know, so I always say, it's a West Coast reference like in an out burger. It's just like we do burgers. You know, if you want chicken sandwich or fish fillet, you got to go somewhere else. But I'm going to do burgers and I'm going to do shakes and fries. And, you know, and so that's what Boxy is. Now, I will say a year into it, we've learned that, you know, you do need more variety. Having waited tables a long time, I always have admiration for restaurants that are like no substitutions. Like, you know, like I went to a restaurant recently and they were like, the chef doesn't think you should do that. It's kind of funny. It was like an anniversary party for somebody in Las Vegas. And we went, big group of people, everybody was great. And it was like a Bobby Flay place. It was cool. I never been to Bobby Flay.
Yeah,
place.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was overpriced, whatever. But like Stephanie wanted to order like a side of pasta. And the waiter actually came out and said, Bobby doesn't like allow that with this. And it was like, oh, I didn't want to offend Bobby. Like, I didn't know what to say, you know. It was just like, oh, I didn't realize that was an issue, like mixing pasta with fish.
That's not
but, way. Yeah. So just FYI, when next time you're out there, but don't make that mistake. But anyway, it's, I just lost my train of thought.
It's okay.
Sorry.
But no, you're talking about, yes. Right.
But I did realize, yeah. So that only goes so far. And so one of the main learnings in the first year is just that there needs to be more variety. And so that's what we're doing. We're going to start offering bath vanities in the next few months that are going to have a different selection, or some really some paintable selections, which is exciting. Mm. We're going to offer some every other room cabinets that sort of can be painted. So we're slowly going to incorporate some variety along with the basic system. And so that's exciting.
No, that is really exciting because one, I'm doing a bathroom renovation on my own. And two, just I feel like that is always what people are asking for. But they want it made in America. They want the shorter lead times. And so I do think I've been looking at the Boxy model and kind of studying it.
Well, good. Yeah. And it's and look, there you know, Angela, there are lots of challenges. I mean, I think one thing that's unique about us, we exist like in a weird space now, in the sense that we've been fortunate to grow. You know, we passed certain milestones in terms of revenue, and which is amazing. And believe me, I never thought that it was going to be what it is now. Right. Mm-hmm. But it's all been bootstrapped. We've never taken any funding. And the problem, or challenge is now that we did almost $24 million between the two companies last year. It's you're a certain size and you seem on the outside to be one thing. And I'm like saying, no, we're still scrappy and we can't do. And there are times even with customers or designers where they want more optionality. And I'm like, it'd be different if we had this war chest, you know, and maybe we will, you know, maybe we will take investment. That's something we've looked at over the last like year and a half. But it is, I've, you know, it's just interesting. Boxy is very different. Boxy gives us an opportunity to really scale.
Yeah.
You know, Semi-Hammy with IKEA is more gradual, kind of, you know, nice building growth. Boxy, if we do it the right way, and I think we are, can become, you know, I keep saying like ubiquity, like this well-known brand. There aren't a lot of kitchen cabinet brands like US that you can name.
No, there aren't.
I agree.
There really aren't. And also just, I feel like usually you're just doing custom millwork, right? You're just finding a carpenter that can do that.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Exactly. It's very like someone said to me, Europe sells systems. Meaning like people go to school for it. Like, you know, it's high tech and everything. And the US sells kitchens. It's like all one-offs, it's all regional. It's guys like me, they're working in their shop or their garage. You know, there are bigger players that are more regional. There's Master Brand, which has 18 brands. I always say you could never name, you know, if your life depended on it, you couldn't name one or the other, you know, it's, you know, and that's the irony of that name. But it isn't like, you know, we can name X number of mattress companies or X number of sock brands or whatever.
Right.
And the irony of that too is we're selling one of the, I gotta let the cat out. Sorry. We're selling.
That's like, help me.
I know, the most expensive thing in a home. And that's the other thing too. And so part of the challenge with Boxy too is trying to be like DTC, like brand online, but you're selling cabinets that could range from $8,000 to $30,000. Mm. You know, it's not selling a pair of socks or eyeglasses or whatever. And so, you know, as you know, the design element, the back and forth, the changes, things that happen on a job site where, yeah. Oh, shit, we thought we could do this, we can't. And so that's another big learning of the last year, is trying to be more flexible with that and managing the supply chain. Even though it's built in the US, there's still challenges. Yeah. And it's like logistics. And part of that is like trucking and stuff. I had no idea that was like, just with COVID, people getting sick, people being vaccinated or not vaccinated. It's just like scary, you know, and it continues.
Yeah. And we're learning. So we're going to switch gears and we're going to jump to the interior design game. But we're going to do a game. It's called Love It or Hate It and Why. And so I pick from Martha Stewart. And these are just some kitchen design trends for 2022. And I wanted to get your thoughts on any of these. So the first one is called pigment packed cabinets. So kind of saying bye-bye to the all white kitchen. How do you feel about this?
Yeah, I think like traditionally white is the number one seller in the US. But I'm a big believer in basics like classics and then pops of color in different places, right? So islands are a great opportunity. Pantries, you know, I always think of, you know, I mean, you can even do a color for the base and whites for the wall cabinets. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, it's interesting, even personally, my fiance Stephanie, she's probably a lot more traditional. And so when we introduced color into our house, it surprised her how much, you know, she liked it more than she thought.
Okay. You know? Maybe. So sort of love it.
No, I love it. I think especially, you know, I'm not going to pitch my brands, but like you can, with painting, you can just paint. I mean, you can just paint them. And that's extraordinary. The effect you can have by just painting and swapping out the hardware.
Yeah. On things. So the next one is working with new materials. I think again, just with the upcharge of wood, looking at new products to put into the kitchen. How do you feel about this?
Yeah, I mean, I think as a, you know, like internally, there are new materials coming all the time from different places, like Europe and the Pacific, like the technology is so good. So even like, you know, it's kind of balancing between like a purist or not. Like when I was making furniture, obviously it's all real hardwood. And it's beautiful, and wood does what it wants, and it looks different. You know, this table looks different than that table. With kitchens, at any kind of like with, so when I was doing custom jobs, man, I would say, hey Angela, meet me at the lumber yard, and we can pick out the sheets of veneers that will literally go to your kitchen, right? And once I grew, I couldn't do that. And so once we scale, we couldn't do that either, right? And so I guess the point is, when you say technology, I say that things that might like kind of make people wince, but like just the artificial wood grains that are so beautiful, that are so like, you wouldn't know, like most of the average eye wouldn't know the difference.
Yeah.
And they're less expensive and they're more durable, especially if you have children and things like that. And so I'm all for like, you know, new quartz surfaces for counters, you know, all that kind of stuff. I love seeing that sort of upgrades and innovations.
And then the last one is really just details. Just, I think people really getting more into the design of what goes inside the kitchen cabinets, the shelving, you know, the pots and pans, even just where do you put all the spices? Like, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that's pretty exciting on the boxy side. We're working with a spectacular industrial design team, a company called Box Clever. So they're based in San Francisco, and they're the same people that designed Caraway and Away suitcase.
Yeah, yeah.
And like on and on and on. And so it is interior organizers. It is saying like, you know, what can you do on the inside that even if you have a basic system on the outside, what can you do on the inside that adds more customization and personalization? So yeah, it's spice rack. It's just like, it's pot storage. It's stuff that maybe sounds boring, but it can make a difference, especially in depending on the size of someone's home.
Yes.
Like, you know, if you got tight space, every inch, every square foot matters. And so that's been kind of a cool thing the last 6 months, working back and forth with those incredibly talented people. Is just like, man, I hadn't thought about that, and being inspired by that side of it, like organization. It's not Marie Kondo, it's not that, but it's like, you know, it's a whole something that I never sort of considered.
I totally agree. So John, that's our interview. Thank you so much. We did it.
Well, I hope you really enjoyed the conversation. And of course, there was a lot of name dropping of different businesses to talk about. So I definitely created a shoppable mood board with my conversation with John for you guys to check out. I certainly have links to Boxy on my website. I definitely want you guys just to continue to reach out if there's any thoughts or questions as you're listening to these interviews. I really love just the emails that have been coming in and people reaching out and going, wow, that was a great conversation, or I really thought about this, or you opened my eyes to a new business I hadn't been looking at. So definitely keep that feedback coming. It's great. I also want to thank everybody who has been supporting my home tour that's in Better Homes and Gardens. It's super crazy right now to know that I am not in just one, but two issues of Better Homes and Gardens. So I'm in the May issue as well as the June issue, which is currently on newsstand. So I want to make sure that you guys pick it up. I appreciate all the love and kudos that's been coming in. It's been amazing to get so much support. So please, as always, continue to listen to the show, subscribe, share with your friends and family, get outside, have some fun, and be safe. All right, bye-bye.